Welcome to Couch Buddies. I'm Kia.
I'm Michelle.
And we are doing another OTP.
Woohoo!
And this can I get a wahoo?
Wahoo!
Sorry. As we mentioned on our previous OTP episode, we're splitting them up now. Mm-hmm. So this episode, it is Michelle's turn to talk about a couple that she loves. So, who are we discussing?
We're discussing a rare one this time.
A rare one? Do tell.
Well, the names of the characters might not even help you. We're discussing Sarah Wheaton and Jacob Whiting.
The only reason I know that is because I'm friends with you.
So, I'm talking about the movie trilogy, Sarah, Plain and Tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of history with this movie, with these movies. My grandma used to keep me in the summer, and this was one of my grandma's favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
The first one came out in 1991, so I was a very small child.
Oh, my God.
The book came out in 1985.
Yeah, see, I definitely saw the first two movies, but I borrowed the books from a friend of mine. Friend of mine. Basically, our moms worked together, and so we were the same age, and so we got thrown together quite often.
Yeah, I understand.
And yeah, I ended up borrowed the books from her, and like I remember just like sitting down and like reading them all in like, you know, like a day.
Yeah, they're pretty short books.
They are pretty short books.
I think I've only read the first one. Like someone read it. I think they read it to us in like first or second grade.
Because mm-hmm.
Like first grade, instead of having nap time, we would have quiet time. They'd turn the lights off, and you'd have your head down on your desk, and the teacher would read. And I think this is one of the books she read, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a very long time, and Miss Martin's not listening to this, but if she is, she was a great, great first grade teacher. So I have a lot of history with these from that side of it, but also Sarah Plain and Tall, like I said, came out in 1991, stars people that are fantastic. Like just say up front. So there are three movies. There's Sarah Plain and Tall, which came out in 91, Skylark, which came out in 1993, and Sarah Plain and Tall Winter's End, which came out in 1999.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that late when that came out.
Yeah, and
oh, wait, sorry, and now I'm having flashbacks. I remember that. I remember it being a big deal when it aired.
And these were Hallmark Hall of Fame movies before Hallmark had a channel, so this was like bigger people would usually be involved in these.
If you listen to our other OTP episodes, when I talked about my OTP of Virginia and Wolf from mm-hmm. the 10th Kingdom, and I talked about having, you know, at that time, you know, like there was no Hallmark channel and everything, like you would have, there was like event TV.
Yes.
You would have like these big kind of mini series, or you would have like, you know, a big, like made for TV movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, like something else that we covered of If the Shoe Fits, that was a made-for-TV movie starring Rob Lowe and Jennifer Grey, who were huge stars in, you know, in the 80s. So, yeah, getting something like this, it was appointment viewing.
Yeah, because Sarah...
Because it was an event.
Sarah Wheaton is played by Glenn Close,
mm-hmm.
and Jacob Whiting is played by Christopher Walken. And I'm going to say this is controversial, what I'm about to say. This is Christopher Walken's greatest role. He makes me feel more in this than I've seen him. And I love him in a lot of other things. My sister's going to throw things at me because the dad in Hairspray is one of her favorite people in the universe. And I love him in Hairspray. Don't get me wrong.
He's great in Hairspray. He's great in like...
In a lot of things.
Well, and we talked about a movie with him in it, Irreplaceable You.
Yes. He's great in that. These movies, I should say.
Yeah.
They reminded me how good he can be. And as a child, especially, like, these were very special to me. And just because I think it's interesting, I'm going to do a little bit of trivia stuff. So the first book came out in 1985, and it was written by Patricia McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm.
She then went on to write all three movies.
Ooh, I did not know that.
She wrote all three movies. The first movie, after its success, they wanted to do another one. She didn't have another book out.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote Skylark the book after writing Skylark the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, there's four books in the series, and so Skylark and the other two or three came after,
mm-hmm.
After, I thought that was interesting. They came like after Skylark, but kind of before the 99 movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. The first movie was nominated for two Golden Globes.
Yeah. I remember that.
Glenn Close was nominated, and it was nominated for Best Miniseries TV Movie. It actually won the Emmy for Best Editing. So it is an Emmy Award-winning movie, technically.
Nice!
It was Glenn Close and Christopher Walken were both nominated for Emmys as well.
Hmm. Now so I'm curious to see what won that year.
I know. It was nominated for, like, all the Emmys it could be nominated for.
Which that's impressive.
I thought for a made-for-TV movie, which granted that's what miniseries slash TV movie was back then.
Yeah.
And but like, it's a pretty impressive, I think, thing for that.
Like the equivalent now would, like, because we don't really get, like, made-for-TV movies anymore that aren't, like, Hallmark.
Yeah, it's mostly miniseries on HBO and stuff now.
Yeah, it would be like either like an HBO miniseries or like a Netflix like limited event kind of thing.
Exactly.
Or so, like limited series.
So like I find that really kind of interesting. Like a lot of people wouldn't expect that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Glenn Close executive produced all three.
Nice!
So she was very involved in the making. They used the same place every time.
I'm very impressed.
They found a house in around this because it's set in the 1910s in Kansas, mm-hmm. and they found a house that kind of fit the time period and decked it out and everything.
Sure would not be hard to do having driven through Kansas.
Well, and they decked it out and everything, like fixed it up, decked it out, all that kind of stuff. And this is the other thing that I really admire. They used the same kids.
Yeah.
Because the thing about these stories is that they are very simple stories, but there's a lot of character depth.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. I remember that about him.
The gist of the first one is basically dad orders a mail order bride to be a mom for his kids. Because
mm-hmm.
his daughter's 10, his son is 6.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his wife 6 years ago when his son was born.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the gist. The first movie is her coming, literally. Her coming to join them. And that's it. And her being able to fit in and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it is so much more than what it sounds like. But they used the same kids, Anna and Caleb. I didn't write down the actors' names because this is basically the only thing they've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And the last movie, that was probably a detriment that they used the same kids because Caleb got out-acted by a 6-year-old. Because Emily Osment joins the cast in the last one as their daughter.
Oh.
And she's like 6. Yeah. So it happens. It's just the way it is. They're good kids. And straight up, Glenn Close and Christopher Walken said they wouldn't do it without the original cast.
Yeah.
They had to bring back those two kids because it really wouldn't impressive. Be right. So I think that's really, really cool just going into it. Like I said, the basic story is he has 2 children, orders a mail order bride to be their mother. Sarah Wheaton from Maine, he didn't order it. He puts an ad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the 1800s. It's the early 1900s. So he puts an ad into a newspaper, basically.
Travelers need not apply.
Yeah. But he puts an ad into a newspaper. This is like wanted a mother, you know, that kind of stuff. And like the movie opens with Anna reading the ad that dad is showing her.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we've had a reply. It's a woman named Sarah Wheaton in Maine. And I'm probably going to mess up Wheaton and Whitting because I do that every time. Also, because Glenn Close chose to have a very heavy Maine accent mm-hmm. at the very beginning, so she says Witten mm-hmm. a lot. So it just gets Witten and Wheaton, and it gets confusing. So I apologize ahead of time when I screw up the last names. But so Sarah is from Maine, mm-hmm. and she lives by the sea. She's lived there her whole life. Her father's a fisherman. Her brother is now a fisherman. But her brother is now getting married, and she doesn't feel right staying in the house.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to go somewhere she can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so they exchange letters for a little while, which is always, like, epistolary stuff. Is,
uh-huh.
And in the book, apparently, it's been a long time since I've read the book, like I said, like, 2nd grade. So it's a very long time. But I remember vaguely that there was, like, several letters in the book that you got to read. Because Anna also sends a letter. And Caleb, who's still young and can't write, sends his dog's paw print.
Mm-hmm.
And Caleb, the most important question Caleb wants to know is, does she sing?
Mm-hmm.
And because he asks Anna all the time for like, tell me about this. Tell me about the day I was born. Tell mm-hmm. me about. And he says, did Mama used to sing? And Anna says, when Mama was alive, Papa sang every day.
Mm-hmm.
And now he doesn't. But it's not what you would expect either. Because like mm-hmm. going back into it, it's been a long time since I'd watched it. And going back into it, I was thinking he was not mean, but gruffer than he is.
Mm-hmm.
He is a softy as a dad.
Yeah.
Like he's taciturn, but he's not mean or angry with the children. I don't think he raises his voice at the kids once.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's a good dad.
Yeah.
Like he comes in from the barn and, like, pulls Caleb into his lap, and they start, you know, looking at stuff. They read letters. He says, "Papa, read Sarah's letter again." And so Papa stops, like Jacob puts the pitchfork down where he's working and pulls out the letter and reads it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's to me, it's just such a very good, like, you can tell he has had to do a lot, but at the same time, he is a good dad.
Yeah.
And, like, even, because Sarah finally says, "I will come for a month and see if I can make a difference in your life." So they're not going to get married right away or anything like that. She's showing up to see if they're even compatible. Like, if there's even a chance that they can make a difference, or she can make a difference in their life. So she comes with her cat, Seal, who is gray like the ocean. And Sarah talks about the ocean a lot, which I don't really bring up. But she goes from living on this beautiful cliff edge.
It would be hard.
To Kansas in the 1910s.
It'd be hard.
Yeah. So Anna is not really fond of having a new mom. Caleb's ecstatic. Caleb is so excited and ready. And, like, he's never had a mom. Because not like his fault, but his birth was what caused his mother's death.
Yeah.
And so Jacob is going to go pick her up. But before he leaves, Anna is very upset, like, crying. And he refuses to leave to go pick up Sarah. She goes, "You're going to be late, Papa." And he won't leave until he can console her and talk to her.
Yeah.
Which I just didn't, like...
Yeah.
That's just such a big thing that you don't see in movies from this time period, of that time period. You know what I mean? Like, it's always going to be the dad's a mean grouch, grunch, you know, drunk, whatever. Dad is never good.
Or, the dad is always going to be emotionally distant.
Exactly. And he's not. I mean, he is in that he's very reined in because he has to be.
And to be fair, I'm like, they live, you know, they live on a farm in Kansas. Exactly. Like, so there are realities about farm life that have, you know, you have to be like a certain, you have to have a certain amount of like stoicism to be able to do.
Yeah.
And so, like, you would have to be that kind of person.
But at the same way, you can see the love he has for his kids. And a lot of it comes down to what we've talked about before, facial acting. Like, his face acting in this movie is one of the things that just blew me away when I rewatched it. Because it's the little things, like you talked about when you talked about The Mummy, little things that you didn't notice when you were younger pop out at you now in a way that you're like, wait, that was there and I missed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to be fair, something I didn't mention when I was talking about The Mummy before is, you know, us doing this podcast, it's like I pay attention like to certain things now.
Yeah.
And so that was like one reason why certain things jumped out at me, because I'm like, after us doing this podcast and like watching so many not so great, like, romance movies that are supposedly, like, I'm, you know, looking at you, How to Lose a Guy.
And
that are supposedly so great that, you know, when you realize, like, that there's no depth to them, that they're very shallow movies.
Yeah.
And so now, like, I look for those little things that enhance a movie and especially like enhance like a romantic relationship that we're supposed to buy as an audience. And
exactly.
So I totally get like appreciating something like that.
Once he ensures that Anna is okay, he begins to head out, and Sarah has told him in her letter, he will recognize her because she is plain and tall. Ha. Huh, that's where Sarah Plain and Tall comes in. Uh-huh. You see, but
they said the title of the thing.
Yeah. But because he is now a few minutes late, she gets off the train and is underwhelmed by what she sees. She sees a lot of like
no offense to Kansas, but I get like having lived on like the coast of Maine.
Well, and it's that stereotypical moment. Like she sees like a grizzled guy leering at her with not all his teeth, and she has this moment of panic.
And gets overrun by tumbleweeds, I imagine. You know, well, I
mean, she's inside, it's fine. But she does have, there is this moment of panic of what if he's not what I thought he was. And so she immediately turns and buys a return ticket to Maine, an open-ended return ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jacob shows up in the door, and it's a beautiful shot because he's silhouetted in the door.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love me a good silhouette.
She's inside the train station, and his hat is off. And the other thing Christopher Walken does in this, because I watched some of the behind-the-scenes stuff when I was first taking notes, and it's so funny because Christopher Walken talks about how he's a kid who grew up in, like, the Bronx. Like, he's got no like, yeah. no, like, farm at all. So him trying to connect with it was really difficult at first.
Well, yeah.
But you buy it. He looks like a weathered old, not old, but a weathered farm man yeah. in this. It's so good. But yeah, he's standing in the doorway, and he's like, Sarah Wheaton?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Sarah Wheaton, and she's like, yeah. And so he picks her up and takes her home, and we have the first awkward conversation, and I have to share part of what happened. It's great.
Oh, so I'm ready.
At first, it's awkward silence, because they're in the just in the buggy on the way home, and then he's like, he just opens his mouth and goes, I hope you won't expect, and she interrupts him, because Sarah is... Sarah grabs everything by the horns. Like, she doesn't wait around. She's very stubborn,
mm-hmm.
very, you know, resolute, and she thinks she knows sometimes more than she does.
Yes, so, I remember that much.
She interrupts him and says, it's all right, Mr. Witten. I didn't come for love. And he kind of, like, takes a beat. Well, what I was saying is, I hope you don't expect to be the house in perfect order. For the house to be in perfect order. Kind of an awkward pause. Didn't ask for love. And, like, he's kind of like,
yeah.
And it, but he never really looks at her as he says it. He's just, I didn't ask for love, and just keeps, you know, mm-hmm. driving the horses and silence for the rest of the drive. But she is very proud and stubborn and very willing to work mm-hmm. and wants to learn.
Yeah.
And you learn more through subtext than text
mm-hmm.
that Jacob's wife was not like that. Her name was Catherine, I believe. I mention it later. But she was more like, do what Jacob says to do and stay in the house and be the good little woman and yeah. don't, you know, because she was raised in the area. So she mm-hmm. very much has that like farmer's wife mentality, but yeah. not necessarily the be in the field working alongside him.
She had mentality. No, she had basically, because there's another like Hallmark movie that I'm going to talk about later for one of my OTPs, and it's The Magic of Ordinary Days, which was also like a Hallmark
mm-hmm.
feature, whatever it's called. Hallmark Hall of Fame. There we yeah. go. And in that you have the, you know, the new wife of the farmer who comes from the city is, you know, she's trying to take an interest, and like she legitimately like loves to learn and just wants to know like how the farm works, and like no detail is too small. Like I want to know. And he just basically kind of like blinks at her and then goes, but why?
Yeah.
And she's like, he's like, because like, I just thought I might be of some use to you. Oh, but you have the house to tend to.
Yeah.
Is like, that's, you know, that's basically what it amounts to.
The mentality, but she's not like that. Cause just tending the house is not.
Yeah.
Not necessarily not going to be enough, but she wants to roll her sleeves up because she used to help her brother on the fishing boat. Like,
yeah.
she's used to hard work because mm-hmm. fishing is not easy.
No.
And so I will say there's a funny moment the first morning she stays at the house
because mm-hmm.
Anna has been the cook for years.
Mm-hmm.
Dad helps.
Yeah.
But Anna, that's she's 10 and yeah. she's on a farm. So she's been taught how to do what she needs to do to take care of her dad. She makes the coffee in the morning.
Yeah, like, considering, like, with the, way back when we talked about, you know, Laura Ingalls Wilder
yeah.
and Alonzo Wilder, I remember, like, reading in that stuff, like, Laura and Mary Ingalls, like, they had chores when they were, like, you know, 3 and 4 years yeah. old.
Well, and Caleb's and, 6 and he has chores.
Yeah, and so... Too. You know, they were always, like, they had stuff to do around the house.
Yeah, so Anna, the first morning that Sarah is there, she's drinking a cup of coffee because she overslept because no one informed her when to be up. And so she tells Jacob, I'll be up earlier next time. I didn't understand. I didn't know. I will be up on time next time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry kind of thing. And she takes a drink of the coffee and makes a face. She goes, did Anna make this? He goes, yeah. She goes, she doesn't drink it, does she? And she dumps out. She goes, from now on, I'll be making the coffee. Because no. But and you see, like, her, like I said, she tries to take an interest in the farm. She wants to know, yeah. like, you know, she tells him, like, I'm not afraid to roll up my sleeves and work. And he kind of gives her this look like, I don't understand what you want.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't say a lot, but his face says everything.
Mm-hmm.
His face and eyes say everything. Like, he's so, like, this is not what I expected
mm-hmm.
at all. And then, like, so time goes on. We see a couple things, but, like, one of the big things is one night, like, early on, she's out on the front porch, like, I think they're snapping green beans for the next day or something. Maybe she's mm-hmm. knitting. It's evening. Like, supper, yeah. they've already had their supper, and Jacob is coming in from tending the stock at night, and he stops because he can see his family sitting on the porch, his two kids and Sarah, and he hears them singing.
Oh, man.
And they're, Sinku, I think. But anyway, so they're singing, and there's this moment where he has this look on his face, and his face goes through an entire range of emotion.
Uh-huh.
From, he's got grief to pain to longing, his eyes well up, and then he gets this kind of little bit of a smile. And you can see that beginning of, like, hope for his family and a little bit of happiness. And he goes on to start walking to the house. And Sarah goes, "Sing, Jacob. Sing with us." And he, hand on the door, like on the screen door, hesitates. And the porch goes quiet.
Yeah.
And then he just goes, "Sing, cuckoo." And, man, I'm sorry. That gets me in the heart. Man. And he,
I don't remember any
and they,
of that.
They all four then begin to sing together this song. And Sarah just smiles because she's done something like early on. And singing becomes, in the later movies even, they sing this song like in the last movie and the she and Caleb together. And so it just becomes a thing for them. And I just really, that's one of those
Dude,
just,
that's amazing.
Here's my heart. Because there's this moment where you're sure he's going to walk through the door and do nothing. Yeah. And he doesn't. And, like, that's, I just appreciate that so much. So, not too long after that, Anna has a screaming nightmare. Like, she wakes up screaming. And it kind of goes through it, because there's a neighbor named Maggie, who is a mail order bride, and she's been telling Anna, maybe she'll stay. You don't know what's going to happen. Like, give her a chance before she even got there. But Anna has confided in her, she's forgotten what her mama looks like. Yeah. And so Maggie gives her this shawl that Anna's mama made for her when she first came. And so Anna is clutching this shawl.
Oh, yeah.
And like Sarah rushes in the room and holds her and covers her in the shawl.
Mm-hmm.
And Anna confides in her that it's hard because Papa put all of Mama's things away out of sight. Mm-hmm. There was a picture of a bird and a blanket she made. And I forget what, some candlesticks, I think, like there's stuff like that. She's like, Papa put it all away. We're not allowed to have it out. And she's like, you know, I sneak in and look at it sometimes, but we're not supposed to have it out.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah gets her back to sleep. And Jacob is standing on the front porch and he's a little bit like emotional because he'd hurt his daughter, you know? And he tells her Anna used to have those all the time. Like when his wife first died, Anna would wake up with screaming nightmares all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you a little bit.
Because
he's like, I would go in there and hush her down to, you know, calm her down, get her to go back to sleep. And Sarah turns to him and goes, perhaps it's a mistake to deprive the children of their memories, which leads to their first fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just says no. His grief and his inability to let Catherine's death, like he can't let that go.
Yeah.
He can't accept it. And
his grief is a defining thread of who he is.
And Sarah tells him that she can't make a difference if he won't let go. She can't make any real difference. And Jacob tells her it's not her business. And he forbids it. And she says, or he says it's not her business. And she says, the past steps on the heels of the present, Jacob. Good line, by the way.
Yeah, man.
And Jacob like orders that his wife's things stay put away. And he goes for a ride to clear his head. And he comes back in the morning. This is the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. He comes back in the morning and they're out. She has put the stuff out anyway.
Well, yeah.
And she looks at him. She goes, I did it for Anna. I know you're angry and I'm sorry for that, but I'm not sorry I did it. And Jacob doesn't speak, but he doesn't put anything away either.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that is another like super defining moment for them.
Yeah.
Like she made this decision even after he said no. Because she's trying to do what's best for the children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and the children deserve.
That's what she's there for.
Yeah. The children deserve to have memories of their mother and to see her things and to know who she is or was, especially like Caleb. He has no idea.
Yeah.
And Anna is forgetting. She doesn't want to forget. So yeah, I love that. And then, you know, Jacob and she don't say anything about it. Nothing else is said about it. Later on in the movie, she goes with Anna and plants flowers on Mama's grave, even though Jacob doesn't want that either. She still does it.
I think she's there to care for the children.
She's there to make a difference and to help people in her eyes. So they go to this church social.
Mm-hmm.
And right before they go, Caleb tells her he doesn't know how to dance. So she teaches Caleb how to dance, like, out in front of the house. It's so cute. And so they get there, and Caleb goes, Sarah, may I have this dance? Like, this cute little bow. And they've told everyone at social. She's an old friend of the family. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no one believes that, you moron, but fine.
Yeah.
And then Caleb asks her to dance. She goes and dances with Caleb, and someone cuts in.
Ooh.
A man, he's kind of like, I don't say a migrant worker because that doesn't make sense, but he's a farmhand that goes from farm to farm during the busy season and works. But he's also been to Maine. And so he and Sarah have a lot that they can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So he's dancing with her, and Caleb comes over, and Jacob has this, like, dead stare at him. Like, uh-huh. And, but Caleb comes over and, like, tugs on his papa, and he goes, Papa, Papa, he took her away. He's like, go get her back, Papa. He cut in. That's allowed. Well, you go cut in. Take Sarah back. And he does.
Yes,
and
of course he does.
And they have a sweet moment mm-hmm. while they're dancing. But then we see him teaching Sarah to plow mm-hmm. after that, at her insistence.
Oh, man, I remember that scene.
And, yeah, she is, like, horses hitched up, and she's plowing. He's watching her and helping her. I just love that is
mm-hmm.
side-by-side working is a yeah. big thing. The children ask her one night about Maine and what she misses, and she talks about how she misses the sea and how she and her brother, when they were children, used to go sliding on dunes. And mm-hmm. she explains to them what a dune is.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob gets up and walks out of the room. And outside, and you're kind of like, well, that was abrupt. But a few minutes later, he comes back in, and he has this like little grin on his face, and he's like, come here. And he takes, he goes, I have a surprise for you. He has set up a hay bale dune, basically. Like from the, he has a ladder set up against a large hay bale, and he has made a dune down it. And Sarah slides down the dune, and, mm-hmm. and the children start doing it, and they get dad to do it once.
Yeah.
And then she and Jay kind of step back and let the children have their fun.
Yeah.
And she's watching the children, huge grin on her face. And the way she's lit is just fantastic, too. Like, she's almost glowing with the way she's lit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob is staring at her.
Aww.
And, like, he pulls one of some of the hay out of her hair and just stares at her. He doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. But you can see it in his eyes that he's on the verge, man. And then she tells him, without even looking, she's like, thank you for the dune, Jacob. It wasn't a big thing. It was a big thing to me. Then I'm glad and you're welcome. And that's all they say about it. Like,
that's how they work. That's all they need to say.
But that's how they work. And so you know, time goes on and her time is been going and a storm comes.
Mm-hmm.
A very bad storm, like tornado level. Don't know that it actually is a tornado. They don't say that. But
it's Kansas. It probably is.
Exactly. It is a super bad storm. Like, they're taking...
Like, we aren't that far from Kansas.
Exactly.
We that weather comes our way.
Yeah. And they're trying to take shelter in the barn, but she's lost Seal.
Oh, no.
And so she's out there in the, like, screaming rain, trying to find her cat. And, you know, Jacob's trying to get her to come in, and she refuses. She's almost breakdown level. Like,
frantic, yeah.
Because she's never had something like this before. I mean, she's had, like, I assume bad storms, but never on a flat space like that. And
you know, to be fair, like, experiencing a tornado for the first time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's frightening on many levels.
And like, Jacob and she have, like, secured the house as best they can. She even changed, like, a pair of his old overalls and helped secure the roof and everything. Like, mm-hmm. like they have worked together very well. But she can't find Seal. And Anna leaves the safety of the barn to try to get her to come back. And Anne's like, come on. I don't remember what she says. And Sarah loses her crap for a second.
Yeah.
And for a split second yells out, I never should have come here. And then immediately, honey. Before she even, like, Anna gets to sleep, and yeah. she's like, I didn't mean it. Like, without a second, she's like, I didn't mean it. But it's too late. Anna goes back into the barn, and she goes back into the barn with Anna, and they do find the cat, but Anna is now convinced that's all Sarah needed to leave.
Oh.
So Sarah's going to leave. Because she saw the return ticket when Sarah mm-hmm. got there. She was putting something, Sarah said, get something out of her drawer or something.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't snooping. She actually just legit, like, picked something up and sees it. And so she's known all along that Sarah could leave at any moment.
Yeah.
So, Sarah goes to Jacob, and because they've lost some crops, he's talking about selling some of the animals, and she's not okay with it. And he's like, "This is a farm. We have to sell animals sometimes.
Yeah.
And you need to get over that kind of thing." I think they're selling some of the sheep. Who she's named?
Oh, honey.
She's named her chickens. She's named her sheep. Yeah. Yeah.
Honey, it's a farm.
Maggie, the neighbor, brings over chickens when she first gets there. Chickens and flowers so they can plant a garden. And they start, the chickens get there and they're like, we thought it'd make a nice supper for you one night. And Anna just goes, those chickens are not going to be eaten.
Yeah.
Sure enough, no. But yeah, so Sarah goes, well, I have money. Can I give you some of my money to help? And Jacob refuses.
I was like, I'm like, this is going nowhere.
Well, he says, I don't need that. She goes, you don't know anything, do you? You don't need anyone. You can't take anything from anyone because you're still so filled with her, filled with Catherine. There's no room in your life for anyone. There's no room for anyone to make a difference. There's no room in your heart. But that's not true. I wanted this to, I'm trying. Some things you just can't make happen. I know. This isn't going to work, is it? And Jacob gives this really conflicted look. He's like, the children are very fond of you, Sarah. So am I. It's just, it isn't going to work. And their conversation is interrupted because Maggie went into labor.
Hachimachi!
And she's like a month early.
Yeah.
So, and the doc's not in town.
Mm-hmm.
So Jacob and Sarah and the children rush over to the neighbor's farm
because
the neighbor had come to get them. And Jacob stays very strong during the delivery, which is very difficult for Jacob.
Well, yeah.
And Maggie, at one point, it's just Maggie and Sarah in the room, and they've become pretty good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at Maggie and goes, Maggie looks at Sarah, rather, and says, you didn't expect to love him, did you?
Oh.
And Sarah just kind of nods, and they go on. Maggie loses consciousness during the delivery.
Okay.
At some point. So Jacob is quietly, subtly freaking out, but he's doing his best to keep his friend calm. And then you hear the slap, you hear a baby cry, husband rushes in there, and Sarah comes out and says, it's fine, this is, you know, baby's a whatever. I don't remember. I think it's a girl, but I don't remember. Yeah. And
here, have a baby.
And so he rushes in there to be with her, and Jacob gets up and leaves. Because like I said, he is subtly freaking out.
He has PTSD.
Yeah. Well, and Maggie was, like I said, she was a mail order bride too, because this man had lost his wife and needed a mom for his children. So he has older children. So Anna and Caleb are taken care of. They're playing with the other kids.
Yeah.
And they're nowhere around. Jacob goes to the barn, and Sarah finds him there, and he is crying. Like, full on.
Oh, man.
Like, you didn't know Christopher Walken could cry.
Oh, my God.
And he's, like, kicking a post in the thing. And they talk for a minute, and he tells her it's his fault that his wife died. Because they were told after Anna was born they shouldn't have any more children because the difficulty was birth was too difficult. He goes, I just figured it was because she was so young, because they got married when she was, like, 16.
Oh,
and he's like, I figured it was because she was so young.
Shit.
Yeah. And I figured it was because she was so young, and so I didn't. So we waited. You know, it had been 4 years, and I needed a son. I needed a boy for the land, and
oof.
And so he hates himself a little bit for it. But
oof,
but he goes, and so we thought it would be okay. And then he goes, and this I will try not to cry talking about it because I am stupid emotional today. But anyway, he finally begins to talk about losing her, and he says, she just wasn't there. I couldn't stop long enough to tell her goodbye, tell her I was sorry, that it was my fault, that I missed her more than life itself. Tears are just streaming down his face as he's saying this. As he admits to Sarah, like, he admits everything to her, he's like, I missed her more than life itself.
Holy shit! And, I really need to rewatch this movie.
And then a few days later, we're back at the farm, and Sarah, they have taught Sarah to drive, because that was, Anna taught her to drive because they were bonding and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it was after she planted the flowers on Mama's grave.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, or Anna taught her to drive. And I think there's a lot of other stuff that happens in this movie. I am limiting it to the Jacob and Sarah really relevant bits, but mm-hmm. everything is relevant.
Yeah.
Because she loves those children so well. Mm-hmm. And it just, oh, I love it. That's one of my favorite things, is seeing someone really care for children that need it. But so she goes to town and says she has a few errands to run.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, don't you want to take Seal? And she's like, no, you take care of Seal. I'll be back. But she's in, like, her nice clothes, like the hat mm-hmm. she came in.
Yeah, yeah.
And she starts to drive away, or she drives away and gets out of sight. And then Anna, I don't remember why, she goes into the room for some reason, and the drawer is open, and the ticket is gone.
Oh, no.
And Anna freaks out.
Well, yeah.
And she goes to Papa, and she tells him, you know, that there was a ticket in her thing, but it's gone now, and da-da-da-da, and you know, I think she's leaving, and he kind of stands there a little lost for a second. She's like, go after her, Papa. Like, go. So he, like, hero, jumps on a horse, takes off from town.
Rom-com chase.
He does.
Rom-com chase.
Rom-com chases. And he gets there as the train is pulling out of the station. And you can see the moment of indecisiveness where he wants to chase that train down, but he has kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns his horse. And as he turns his horse, Sarah exits the depot.
Yeah.
She was returning the ticket for money. And she's kind of battling this all out as he's, like, walking. Mm-hmm. He doesn't speak. For the rest of this movie, he doesn't speak. It's like 10 minutes, like not 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
He walks up the train stairs and she's explaining, I took back the ticket. I thought you could use the money for the farm. I wasn't trying to do anything and da da da. And he just like takes her hands, kisses one cheek and then the other, and then kisses her.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing you see is them driving home and there's a bit more bounce to them.
Yeah.
Like his horse is tied up to the back of the wagon.
Yeah.
And they're driving home and he helps her out of the thing and they're all smiles and he kind of spins her around and it transitions into him spinning around in their wedding dress in front of the church. And that's where the first movie ends. And like that would have been good enough. Right.
Yeah.
But 2 years later we get the sequel and it's 2 years later. Like mm-hmm. every time they make a movie, that is how many years have passed. Like they
makes sense.
I love that they did that too. I appreciate that. Yeah. So 2 years later, there's a drought, and Jacob and Sarah, you know, they are settled in their marriage. They are sharing loving smiles left and right.
You said this was what, the 1910s?
This is 1912 by now.
1912. Okay.
Sorry. I know what you're thinking. Yeah. But yeah, so there's a huge drought going on all over.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of the big like plot of this one is the drought.
Mm-hmm.
But Jacob and Sarah are so comfortable with each other, and you can feel how much they love each other in just the way they smile at each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. That they just smile at each other, and you can see it. Like, Glenn Close and he have such great chemistry. Like, Christopher Walken and Glenn Close.
That's
surprising.
So surprising.
Right? But then again, Glenn Close is amazing. And so is Christopher Walken. But
they are. But because this is going to sound so weird. A lot of the things that I've seen Christopher Walken in, he is just a basic weirdo.
Yeah, he's not in this.
And so it's hard for me to think of him having romantic chemistry with anybody.
I understand that. But so Sarah's talking to Maggie through the movie and talks about how she's surrounded by motherhood everywhere she looks. Their cow just calved and Seal is having kittens and all of this stuff is going mm-hmm. on. And so, yeah, she feels that she's surrounded by it. And she tells Maggie, I have this dream every night that everything will be all right if I just have a baby. And that, although that is the only time it is said,
mm-hmm.
colors everything with Sarah in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's been 2 years and they don't have a child.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also she and Jacob working side by side on the farm and drought, right? So a mm-hmm. small fire breaks out.
Oof, motto.
Just a small one. And they fight it together. And, like, they get it all. The kids are getting, like, are wetting the bags.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're beating the fire out, the Jacob and Sarah are. She catches fire at one point, and he tackles her and puts the fire out and mm-hmm. stuff. And then he looks at her and says, you're a sight, you know. And you look beautiful.
Aww.
And, yeah. He just has, like, when you talked about Rick and Evelyn.
Yeah.
You talk about the adoration that you see.
Yeah.
You see that here. The way that Jacob loves her is silent and powerful
mm-hmm.
for me. But so there is sadness all around them. So, but even in that, Jacob is trying to find some happiness because he has his family. Their neighbors are beginning to move away because there's no water for the crops. And Jacob begins to hint that maybe Sarah should go somewhere green. And she tells him, I'm not leaving Jacob. And, like, there's this beautiful moment where he's hinting this for, like, the first time, and they end up, like, spinning. Like, he holds her arm, and she's holding his arm, and they're spinning. And she's going, I'm not leaving Jacob. I'm not leaving Jacob. And they're spinning, and they're smiling at each other, but also it's kind of this frantic, frenetic thing where she is not leaving Jacob.
Yeah.
Period. And Jacob is smiling, but he also, in his heart, knows that maybe it would be better for her if she did.
Mm-hmm.
And not too long after that, she has kind of a bit of a breakdown moment. I think water stops coming from the well. Like, she's pumping it in the house, and it won't pump out. And she goes out and realizes how low it is. And I don't know exactly why, but she basically, like, panics and starts to hyperventilate.
Yeah,
and
I can see
she's
that.
Screaming, and she's throwing things for a second, and then she starts to, like, hyperventilate. And Anna or Caleb one goes and gets Jacob, and he just comes in and wraps her in his arms mm-hmm. and holds her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from behind while she's doing that, just holds her and says it's going to be okay. But you can see in his face that he's worried about Sarah.
Yeah.
So he organizes a birthday party for her.
Aww.
And her aunts, which is, she calls, they call themselves the Peculiar Treasures. They're her maiden aunts. There's three of them. They live in Maine.
Yeah.
And she writes letters to them all the time. So you hear about them a lot. But they sent a gramophone. So in the midst of this, they have a huge birthday party, huge for them. Like, they invite all the neighbors, and the neighbors bring food and fixings, and they have lemonade, and
they have a block party,
gramophone, basically. And they're dancing. Caleb's dancing with Sarah, and then Sarah and Jacob are dancing together. And it's such a great moment. And then Maggie tells her that they're moving.
Aww.
I think that's where the hype, that's part of where she panics again, is she gets so mad that they're leaving. Like, she's mad at Maggie. She's mad at Maggie's husband. She's mad about the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're not going to come back, probably. Mm-hmm. And Jacob tells her, you have to do for your family. Like, we have to make those decisions. And she says, I'm not leaving, Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And then they mention that Maine has gotten so much rain, and Sarah tries to skip that in the letter, but they won't let her.
Yeah.
And Maine, it's like the whole cup is full, because she and her brother used to put a glass outside to measure.
Mm-hmm.
So Caleb goes and puts a glass outside on the thing, so when it rains, they'll be able to tell how much.
Yeah.
So cute. And so, yeah, then one night, there's heat lightning, and the barn burns down. The barn catches fire. They don't have enough water to put it out. They have to conserve their water.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have to stand back. Jacob has to physically pull Sarah back. And they watch it burn. They got their animals out and everything, but they have to watch it burn.
Yeah.
And the next day, he tells her she needs to take the kids to Maine. Because he can't deal with knowing that his kids aren't okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs them to be well, and he needs Sarah to be well and taken care of. And she looks at him and says, what about us? What'll happen to us? And he says, we'll write letters. We've written letters before. And they kind of give you this really sad smile.
Yeah.
Before the next thing you see is her taking the kids onto the train,
mm-hmm.
and they're heading to Maine. And they're staying with the aunts. The aunts go skinny dipping. Caleb accidentally spots them. He's like, it's like a big shiny seal. Because the aunts are like 80s. And they go skinny dipping at night. It's hilarious. But her Aunt Lou, like, she sends the kids down to the water. And her aunts are, like, feeding her up and stuff. And her Aunt Lou, who's, like, the tomboy of the family, looks at her and goes, why didn't you tell us you were pregnant? And Sarah goes, what? But I can't be. But I thought it was just stress. Like,
yeah,
the stress of everything going on. And then she smiles, but her hand, like, covers her mouth.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? Is this really happening? Like, what?
Yeah.
And they're like, so when will Jacob be joining us?
Mm-hmm.
And she just tells him Jacob won't come. Because Jacob told her before she left that his name is in this land, his blood is in this land. Mm-hmm. He can't go. This is where he belongs. Yeah. And so she's like, Jacob won't come. She says it with complete certainty about 10 times throughout the rest of the movie. And they do write letters, and we get snippets of the letters.
Mm-hmm.
He refuses to sell Moonbeam, which is the calf that he and Sarah helped birth.
Aww.
Because it was breached, so they had to, like, reach in and pull it out.
Yeah.
So, the calf that they pulled... He sells all the rest of the farm animals, but not that calf.
Aww.
Like, he starts to, and then he doesn't. And, like, through the letters and through stuff he says, you begin to realize that Jacob is having the realization that family is more important than the land. And that's something he's never realized.
Yeah.
That there's something more important than this land. And, like I said, they write letters back and forth. You get some of Caleb's letters to him, some of Anna's, some of Sarah's. Sarah doesn't tell him.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, blessedly, it rains. And Jacob stands out and feels it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's such a great scene. Because he had a moment where he almost took the cup down and then he put it back out there. Because he's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Staying there until Caleb, like... And so the cup fills up to the brim and, you know, we're saved. And you flash back over to Maine and you see the family still there. And they're walking up to the house. And you look down at this beautiful cliff. They have, like, a little overlook area in their house. And you look down to this overlook, and there's Papa.
Aww.
Jacob has come to Maine. And they said, I thought you said he wouldn't come. He wouldn't. And she's just shocked.
Well, yeah, the kids, as you would be.
The kids rush down and, like, are telling him everything that happened and everything and how great it's been and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then the aunts, who are wonderful people, call the kids, like, come on, let's go inside and have this.
Yeah,
so the kids take off running, and Sarah slowly makes her way down there. And And Jacob tells her he loves her, which is the first time you hear that in either movie.
Yeah.
Is him actually say, I love you, Sarah. There are things that can't be written in a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes a kind of a moment and then tells him, this is another really good, like, once again, Glenn Close acts the crap out of anything. Uh-huh.
She's amazing.
I'm frightened because this terrible love I have for you is so strong. I've never known such a thing before. And, like, they kind of sit there for a minute. And then she goes, but we should go home soon because I want our baby to be born on the prairie. And you see him blue screen. Like, he has the second of his brain. Like, you see the restart button. Like, you see the restart button get pressed in his brain. He's like, wait, what? Like, in his head, he has to repeat it all back. And he just gets this fantastic grin on his face. And then you see them, they're like, he hugs her, and the shot is so gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
Because once again, they're outside, actually on an overlook, overlooking the ocean. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then they're home. And Sarah walks outside and takes a stick and writes her name into the ground and says, my name's here now too, and I'm not leaving, basically. Or she didn't even say anything. She just writes her name into the ground. And he walks over and looks at it, and they join hands and walk off into the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of the second movie. Like, they could have, for 6 years, we thought that was the end.
It could have been a great one. Yeah.
And for a very, I didn't see Winter's End when it came out because I was like, why?
I don't know that I've seen Winter's End.
I just didn't know why. I've
seen Skylark. Yeah.
I still don't know why it was bothering to be made, but it's not a bad movie. Let's say it that way. There's not a lot of Sarah and Jacob in it, romantically. Like, because they're settled by this point. They have spent 6 more years. They have a 6-year-old daughter. Like I said, played by the adorable Emily Osment. I believe it's Jack Palance comes back playing his dad. I believe that's who it is. Don't quote me on that. I'd have to look it up, but I think that's who it is.
Oh, but Jack Palance.
I think that's who it is. But his dad comes back, and he thought his dad ran off and left the family, you find out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his dad left his mom high and dry. He assumed his dad was dead, because why else?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Sarah has the not fun job of being like, he's your father. You want to at least know why.
Yeah.
Like, you need to at least talk to him and find out why and get closure on this. And, you know, he is just as stubborn as Sarah is many times.
Uh-huh,
And turns out that dad came home because he's dying.
Naturally.
And he wanted to see the farm one more time, make sure his son was okay. Turns out mom kicked him out. Mom told him to leave and not come back.
Ooh.
And he also admits, he goes, that doesn't mean I should have. Doesn't True. Mean I should have. Like, I'm not saying that I was in the right for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He has lots of, like, things. He goes, I wasn't right for leaving. That's, no. He's like, I've lived my life. I've done a lot of stuff. I've been a lot of places.
Yeah.
But he's always done, like, farmhand type work.
Mm-hmm.
So Jacob breaks his leg while fighting with him.
Oh, wait, maybe I have seen this.
Like, Jacob falls over backwards and breaks really his leg on the stuff. So Jacob's off his feet. So the dad, that's how they reconnect. He stays to help Caleb.
Yeah.
To help Caleb with the farm work. But it's the end of winter. They have one more big blizzard at the end of winter.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, like, the stuff with Jacob and Sarah, there's an ease to them,
mm-hmm.
as there would be.
Yeah.
There's, like, this one scene early in the movie where they go on a moonlit stroll together, and they're just so, like, they still look at each other like they just got married yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so cute. Like Jacob goes to town early in the movie and buys yarn for Sarah in the colors of the sea, blue, gray, green, which is a throwback to the first movie. I was like, oh, appreciate.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. But yeah, so then Jacob's laid up, and so there's a big blizzard. Caleb has tied string from the door of the barn all the way to to a tree, and then from the tree to the house.
Yes.
As you would in a whiteout blizzard. Well, she hears Caleb getting up to go check the stock during the blizzard. So she says, she goes, I'll wait for you to come back. Go ahead. But I'm staying up till you get back. He doesn't come back in.
Mm.
You see it from, like, as the audience, we see that the rope has fallen off the barn door. He can't find it in the dark, so he goes back into the barn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sarah doesn't know that.
Yeah.
So Sarah, in her nightgown, wraps jacket, like, big coat around her. Own. Well, she puts, like, big coat, mittens, hat, all that kind of stuff, and goes outside and gets lost in the blizzard. She's trying to follow the rope, but the rope, she has no way of knowing the rope is broken.
Yeah. So I'm just flashing back to, like, you know, the schoolhouse blizzard of the 1880s and all this kind of stuff. So
So she she's out there for hours, and they find her kind of buried under snow, and she's still alive, which is shocking.
Yeah.
It's because it's not like 8 o'clock. Like, it's probably been 3 hours, maybe four.
Yeah.
And they find her. They obviously, Jacob doesn't find her. His dad finds her. And Caleb and he bring her in. And they're like, get those clothes off her. We got to get her warm. Jacob can't do anything. His leg is broken. He is just sitting there in the floor staring at his dying wife.
Oh, and he is, honey.
And he is desperately begging her to stay awake. Because that's one of the things you do is keep someone awake. So he is just desperately, he's like, stay awake, Sarah, just a little bit more. Sarah, please, just like desperately begging. You can't sleep now, Sarah, stay awake. And like just tearfully. Like he almost loses his voice because he's so teary. Oh,
baby.
And then she's going to be okay. Yeah. So Ty, like, she's going to be okay,
killing
obviously.
Killing her off now would be a bit of a downer.
It's the last movie in the series, so. So she's going to make it and everything. She's wrapped up in, like, warm clothes, and it's, like, a few hours later, and Jacob's kind of next to her, and she tells him that as she lay there kind of dying, she always thought she'd see Maine, but she saw Kansas and Jacob, and I knew this was my home. This was my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
What more do you need? Like, that's the story. It's the story of a woman coming from Maine and making a life in Kansas with a man that she adores.
Yeah.
And, like, I just love, like, their silent support of each other. Like, because, yeah, she argues with Jacob that he should do things. She does not do that in front of his father. And, in fact, point blank tells his father, I am not getting involved on that. Like, that is between you and him. I don't need to hear the story. I think he should hear it, yes, but I'm not getting involved.
Yeah.
Like, granted, she's involved because she tells Jacob, you should listen. But lock him in a cupboard.
She's involved, but she's staying out of it.
Yeah. She's doing what she thinks is best for her husband because she invites him to stay when the husband wants her to, like, Jacob wants him to leave. She invites the dad to stay. Yeah. She invites him to stay and stuff. So, for at least a little while.
Yeah.
And Emily Osment's character, I forgot her name, she is just immediately taken with him and, like, attached. Like,
of course.
You see a scene, she's just, like, jumping in his lap and is telling him stories, and it's so cute. So cute. And he has no idea how to, he's never had a grandchild. Yeah. So he's like, what this be?
Yeah.
And like, Anna has moved out because it's 1919, so the war.
Yep.
And, her fiance is missing. In the war, she's a nurse now. Like, all that kind of stuff is going on, too. Oh,
man, I wasn't thinking about it being that. My brain did a narrative time jump. It did not keep up with a timeline jump. Geez. And so, it was not occurring to me that it would be.
They've just dealt with a flu outbreak.
Oh, yeah, man.
They didn't call it the Spanish flu. They just dealt with a flu outbreak. All of that stuff is happening, right? Yeah.
Oh my God.
So that's all going on in the background. But you have Jacob and Sarah as this firm anchor foundation in the middle, and their relationship is rock solid. Like, there's never a doubt. Like I said, for me, the biggest Rachel Jacob moment in that last movie is that scene where she almost dies, and then tells him. I said Rachel, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Rachel and Jacob's biblical. I apologize. Sarah and Jacob.
I literally was like, who the fuck is Rachel?
Sarah and Jacob are, that desperation for her to live, and then her telling him this is where her heart is. So meaningful after the first two movies where she talks about Maine a lot.
Yeah.
That, like, moment where she accepts, this is my home, and I know that now. And, like, not that she didn't know it before, but she knew, she thought she still loved Maine more than Kansas, and she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, oh man. Oh, just so good.
Yeah.
So my song.
Yeah.
I did Jason Mraz's I Won't Give Up.
Nice. Love me some Mraz.
It's like, it's, you know, when I look into your eyes, it's like watching the night sky or a beautiful sunrise. So much they hold, and just like them old stars. I see that you've come so far to be right where you are. How old is your soul? I won't give up on us, even if the skies get rough. I'm giving you all my love. I'm still looking up. And when you're needing your space to do some navigating, I'll be here patiently waiting to see what you find. Because even the stars, they burn. Some even fall to the earth. We got a lot to learn. God knows we're worth it. No, I won't give up. I don't want to be someone who walks away so easily. I'm here to stay and make the difference I can make.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah. Our differences, they do a lot to teach us how to use the tools and gifts we've got. Like, the whole song works for them. But the moment I read that Make a Difference, I went, that's the song right there.
Yeah. Man, you can't go wrong with Jason Mraz.
Yeah. And I love this song. I've had it for ages. And I think it came on. And I went, oh, well, that's it. What am I even?
Yeah.
And then, like, I almost, like, I looked at different ones today. And then I reread the lyrics again. Because I listened to it before. But I reread the lyrics again. And I was like, that Make a Difference is so important.
I Space. What was the name of the song?
I Won't Give Up.
I Won't Give Up. Okay.
Because I Won't Give Up on Us.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, that's Sarah and Jacob never give up on each other, whether it's, you know, talking about his dad, mm-hmm. whether it's talking about the rain. You know, even though she says he won't come to Maine, she still fully believes she's going to go home at some point.
Yeah.
Like, she never for once sets up shop in Maine and thinks she's staying there forever.
Mm-hmm.
She knows she's going to go home. She just assumes it's going to be a letter sending her home.
Yeah.
So Jacob showing up to get her. That's
massive, yeah.
It's so massively important, because that's telling her she's more important than the land.
Yeah.
And that is a huge thing. Like,
that, man. Do you own these movies?
I do.
I'm borrowing these. They're like, so good. I am leaving here with these tonight.
And, like, I know that they're super schmaltzy and schmoopy to some people, but
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. And for me, there's something about steadfast, steady love that I... a freaking door.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a theme that's big with both of us.
Yeah.
It really, really is. And, like, listening to you talk about this, like, I was feeling so in glimpses more than, you know, like, oblique references, but, like, I was definitely getting sort of a, you know, Laura and Almanzo kind of
a little bit. Yeah.
Kind of feeling from it. Yeah.
With the exception of, I think he's probably softer than Almanzo in real life. Move TV Almanzo, not so much.
Almanzo. TV Almanzo was a powder puff.
I love TV Almanzo, though. No,
I didn't mean it in a bad way. But yeah, like...
And, once again, I'm just going to say, my love... There's so much face acting between both of them in these movies. They say more in a look than some people can say in 20 pages of dialogue.
Like, and that is something that you and I continually come back to. Like, yeah. And we... It's like we have surrounded ourselves... You know, like, we have filled our viewing hours... with actors who are good at conveying that sort of thing. Because I'm going to talk, like, there's another OTP that I'm going to talk about, like, where one of the actors is, like, I'm talking, you know, like, major levels of that kind of thing.
Well, I think that's something we look for. Because I know of at least two more that I'm going to have where that's the case.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. And it's, like, because it's something that, like, we do constantly, like, refer to. Yeah. You know, it being hard to describe, like, the look on someone's face, but, like, just the look speaks volumes.
Yeah.
And, like, it, and how, like, that one look can inform, like, more than the following dialogue.
Yeah.
Or, and yeah, it's definitely something that since we've started this podcast, like, it's something that, don't get me wrong, there are definitely movies where, you know, sometimes, you know, especially like when we do a midweek record, when I've got work stuff and, you know, I'm trying to spend some more time with my family, and that, like, sometimes, like, my brain, I'm just like, okay, surface level only, like, like, it'll get me through. But particularly, like, with the OTPs and, you know, and sometimes, like, when we watch a movie together,
yeah,
you know, I'm able to pay attention to those sorts of things. And it's, this is going to sound so reductive and so stupid, but, like, it's amazing what you see when you take the time to watch.
Yeah, it's true. Cause, like, a lot of times when we watch movies first time through, we only watch them once. Like, I've only seen it once or something. I do miss stuff.
Yeah.
And, like I said, Sarah Plain and Tall is... I did not watch Winter's End until I was much older.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely didn't watch it when it came out. I think my grandma recorded it, and so I watched it eventually with her. Mm-hmm. But Sarah Plain and Tall and Skylark were, like, repeated viewing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the romance stories that I loved, partially because there are kids in it, and they're real kids. Like, they feel real, especially the first movie. The kids feel real, and the relationships feel real.
Yeah. Sorry, I just thought, I was thinking there was something else that, like, I was getting flashes of when you were talking about this, and it's, I was getting flashes of couples and characters from Road to Avonlea.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was getting.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we're going to talk about one couple from Road to Avonlea at some point someday.
Gus and Felicity.
But yeah, like Sarah Palin and Tall was, and Gus and Felicity too, actually.
Yeah.
Some of my, as like a child, that was some of my almost required viewing with my grandmother. She loved mm-hmm. Sarah Palin and Tall desperately. Like it was,
yeah.
It's one that she bought it. She bought it on like the Hallmark Hall of Fame VHSs. She didn't record these off TV. She owned them on like the beautiful VHSs with like the covers.
Yeah.
And she would buy them for other people. Like, she would have 2 and 3 copies just so she could give them to people because of how good she thought these mm-hmm. movies were. And, like, she did that with a few movies. Like,
yeah.
She did that with some Hallmark movies that I wish she hadn't have done that with. But my grandma's passed away, so I keep them. But that's the only reason. Which sounds horrible.
I'm thinking, and I was like, what Hallmark movies would I, like, hoard and pass out to people? Borrowed Hearts.
Yeah, that's not technically a Hallmark movie. That's not
true. It just gets lumped in with it all does. Of that. It does. So I just think of it that way.
But actually, my mother-in-law bought me the Sarah Palin and Tall movies. I put them on my wish list, and she surprised me for Christmas a couple of years ago and bought them for me. And sitting down to rewatch them, like, I haven't seen them in years and years. I knew mm-hmm. I loved Sarah and Jacob, but it was just something I hadn't watched in a really yeah. long time. And I was expecting to, like, find Christopher Walken more hammy, and he's not. He wields it beautifully.
Wait, like,
and like part of it I think is because Glenn Close, when you're with Glenn Close, I think you have to bring yourself up to another level because mm-hmm. she's just freaking brilliant.
Like, the thing with Christopher Walken is that he has always been, you know, like, I've always thought he is a great actor.
Yeah.
Like, I've always thought he's good. I've just never really seen any of the thing, like his early stuff, like his early yeah. work. Where, you know, where the stuff where he's, like, critically acclaimed. You know, for me, it's, like, you know, more cowbell. And, yeah. you know, and, like, where he plays the, you know, he's the Headless Horseman in the Sleepy Hollow remake. And, mm-hmm. and Hairspray. And just, yeah. and, you know, seeing those things where he is a little more on, like, the camp side of things. Well,
I own the movie Puss in Boots, which is a Christopher Walken movie from early in his career. Oh
my God, I'd forgotten that.
It's a musical from early in his career, and it's okay, it's not very good. But once again, it's one of those movies I watched as a kid, and I have adoration for it because of how bad it is. Like, I genuinely, like, it's bad, but Christopher Walken playing Puss is so funny and camp man. And wonderful that I can't help but love it.
Mm-hmm.
And so... So, yeah, like, having that in my head, but also having Hairspray, which I've seen much more recently, mm-hmm. and, like we talk about Irreplaceable You.
He's great.
And things like that, like, and you, like, or something, you know, really horrible and campy, and, you know, you have all the different, there's all the Christopher Walkens, you just have to choose your flavor. And, and for my money, the Sarah Palin and Tall one is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because of the stillness he brings to it, and the, like I said, the range of emotions he can display on his face is something I had forgotten or never
mm-hmm.
known.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And so, yeah. And Glenn Close, I there's no point to me in praising her because she's wonderful. It's like praising Meryl Streep. She's wonderful. Like,
yeah.
absolutely freaking wonderful. Can, in my opinion, do almost
Glenn
no
Close
wrong.
Glenn Close is like Meryl Streep, the Redux.
Yeah. Like she's amazing. And in Sarah Palin and Tall, she's absolutely wonderful. And the fact that she executive produced it, that it is written by a woman, had the same director for all three movies, too. I believe it was a man, but same director for all three movies.
That's big for the early 90s.
Yeah, they were absolutely adamant that they have the same people to recapture the magic. And, like, that, I think they did.
Yeah.
The last movie, I don't think is as good, but that's got a lot more to do with, I don't feel like there was a lot more story to tell.
Yeah. The financiers of The Mummy 3 could have taken a lesson and had the same writer-director.
that's all I really have to say about Sarah Palin and Tall.
That was absolutely excellent. And I'm going to thieve those movies from you. Because I desperately need to rewatch them now. So, but if you have nothing else to add, and I don't either. So that will get it for this episode of Couch Buddies. As always, we thank you very much for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode of Couch Buddies, why not leave us a rating and review over on iTunes? And while you're at it, don't forget to hit the subscribe button on your podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us by searching on social media. We're Couch Buddies Pod on Twitter, on Tumblr at couchbuddies.tumblr.com, and you can email us at couchbuddiespod@gmail.com.